Welcome to the Easy Yoga Podcast with myself, Gemma Neese, Easy Yoga founder, author, yoga coach, and relationship coach. It is my pleasure to have you here and for you to feel energized, calm, happy, and for you to have the perfect relationship with yourself, your partner, and your family without seeing a family therapist, changing your personality, or leaving your job. You will learn techniques and things to help you guide you through a better life through health, meditation, yoga, journaling, nutrition, and all things yoga, for you to have the life you deserve and crave, and for you to love yourself on a soul level. Thank you so, so much for being here today, and I am so grateful and so full of love to have you here. Enjoy this next episode. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode from Easy Yoga, all things relationships, yoga, and well-being. And today, my special guest in person, which is amazing, is my friend Gemma Wallace. And Gemma, aka the Sussex Mum, is a self-made entrepreneur, mum of three, wife, avid lover of all things Sussex, and soon-to-be author. She is passionate about supporting independent businesses here in Sussex through her social media channels, business coaching, and women in business networking events, and has recently ventured out into the world of YouTube with her new channel, Not Your Typical Mum. In between her work, you will find Gemma recipe testing in the kitchen, spending time outside with her chickens, or enjoying time with her family. So welcome! Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
That's all right. Yeah, it's exciting. And we've taken ages to actually get this done. But...
oh my God, honestly. finally.
So how did you kind of get into, the Sussex Mum?
So really, I've always had this dream of helping people. I help people in a day job. I work for local government, which is kind of the boring day job that I do. And I help people daily with that, whether it's, you know, with their housing or lots of different subjects. But I just love helping people. I also then deal with businesses at work and giving them support and advice and things. And I think last year was a bit of a milestone because I had a hysterectomy. And during that time, obviously laid up in bed, wasn't working, wasn't doing anything. And I just thought to myself, I really want to just sit here and be productive and do something. So I thought, I'm just going to go for it. I didn't know it was called the Sussex Mum at the time or exactly where it was going to head. But I just knew that I wanted to start giving a platform to independent businesses in the local area, supporting them, doing things for free and just really kind of showcasing their services and products. And then, that's where it kind of started. And it's grown rather massively in a year into something that, something quite fun, but it's good.
Yeah, that's really good actually. And with the hysterectomy then, we were going to be talking about perimenopausal and stuff. So how have you found that?
Oh my gosh, it was, do you know what actually, it's been a blessing and a curse. I wanted a hysterectomy for years, which is weird. You know, I'm 37 and I knew I was having a hysterectomy for 3 years. It was COVID, I was meant to have it 2 weeks before COVID struck.
Oh, no.
So then my surgery was put off. And this was after a result of years of agony. They never really confirmed anything. Sometimes they find a cyst, they weren't sure, but it was always around my period time and it was just so painful, excruciating. The final time actually came when I was flying back from Canada and my period started on the plane. By the way, TMI, obviously, the word period shall be mentioned a little bit here. I had to be laid out on the plane for the whole flight. It was horrendous because of, I think, the air pressure combined with starting period, which turned out I had endometriosis, which we didn't know until my hysterectomy, until everything was taken.
Wow.
It was just unbearable, honestly. It was the worst flight. So I came back and was like, enough. Finally, like I said, had scheduled and then was planned to have this hysterectomy, which they kind of begrudgingly agreed to. Then it got cancelled. And then I spent 3 years still suffering. I couldn't go to the toilet properly. It was really bad at the end of that. And I'd already sterilised. So the big part for me wasn't emotional in one way because I knew I couldn't have children.
Yeah.
I'd already been sterilised years before after losing. We have three children. We've now got the 16-year-old. We had a 12-year-old. Obviously, he's now 12. We lost him when he was a baby. And then our youngest, Jaden, who is 9. And I think after that, I just couldn't. I had very difficult pregnancies, didn't want to have any more. So that's why I chose to be sterilised. Come, obviously, after COVID, then suddenly get told within a couple of weeks when COVID, the lockdown was ended, we're now doing it. Oh, okay.
Nice.
Which is great. But it was why I need to get myself prepared for this. And I was terrified. Of course, I'm a bit of a Google person. So I may have Googled and I may have even watched the procedure on YouTube.
Oh, no.
That would have been a mistake. Don't recommend doing that. And I was worried things, you could prolapse, you could this, you could that. Because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to me. But thankfully, I listened to the doctors, had an excellent surgeon. They used a robot. That was unusual. They just brought this out when they... were doing my surgery, they just started bringing in robots to do your surgery, which is obviously guided by the surgeon, but it means minimal staff, less invasive surgery, so they didn't have to fully open me. They could do it through a keyhole, which was amazing. So the recovery was a bit quicker, which was awesome. And yeah, and it was, I will say, the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. It was worse than childbirth, which was interesting. I mean, this is personally for me, I do have fibromyalgia, so I do feel pain quite strongly. They were excellent in hospital. It's just when I kind of then went to get out of the bed, I realised I was being cut in two, basically. Nice. So I couldn't stand. So that was fun. But no, after the recovery, it was long. It was a 6 weeks recovery. And obviously during that time, like I said, I tried to then use it. I was at home the whole time. So that's why I was building the website, designing everything, designing what I wanted to do with my kind of future career. But at the same time, was so thankful because at the same time during the surgery, they realised I had a twisted bowel, which is why I've been struggling with the toilet. My womb was stuck to my side. So it all twisted and got stuck. The clip from my sterilisation, because I only had one tube left at that time, had to come off and got stuck in my other side of my stomach. So there was a reason I was in so much pain. Yeah. So they said it was just an absolute mess. So since the surgery, bowels again, TMI, you know, still not 100% back to normal. We're a year on now, because they had to open the bowels and do a few things, it really did mess with things a little bit. Yeah. But on the whole, I've had no pain. And that has been 9 years of pain it was in the end.
Wow.
So to go from 9 years of pain to nothing, it's just been like, wow. And, it really was, even the first day after, obviously, surgery pain, but even just going to the toilet, I was like, okay. Waiting, no pain. What's happening? And then period time, no period. Very confused. So I would say there's definitely been some emotions, because even though I knew that I couldn't have children, I think it was the final, because I could have potentially had the sterilization reversed if I'd ever wanted to. I think it was the final, like, no, you're done now, there's no more. I have kept my ovaries because of my age. They wanted to keep the ovaries, and you know, that will then prolong the full menopause. But I've definitely started to go, I would say, to perimenopause. Like, you know, I'm getting hot sweats.
Yeah.
Definitely some kind of irritability sometimes. I'm trying to curb it. I'm trying to be patient. You know, and definitely kind of changing my nails and my hair and my skin. Yeah. Skin's become a lot drier all over. You know, I do get dry in the winter, but definitely even now I'm getting drier skin. So it definitely has started to impact already, which is interesting to me. You know, and I'm 37, I then think, okay, what? When's it going to start? And that's, I think I did go to a menopause talk, which was really interesting. And they said they never know when it's going to start.
Okay.
Or this is what they said to me, or this is, you know, I think people differ, but they said they could never give you a definitive. The usual is this, but then it's very genetic based. And my mum had to have her menopause induced because she was still 50-odd and still having periods. So they say that you'd normally follow after your parents and after your mum. So I was like, right, then, but how does that work if I've had a hysterectomy? Does that completely then, you know, switch everything up and go, well, actually, now your body thinks it's kind of going into early menopause? I don't know. And there were no answers from doctors. I've had no information given. It's, you know, they just basically said to carry on. I've had hormones tested because I asked and they were fine, which is awesome for now. But otherwise, well, actually, no, that's a lie. My pituitary gland one was up. That's when I was ill recently. That one's, is it up or down? I think it's up. That one was off, but not the usual estrogen and all those ones. But yeah, it's just really interesting.
So then are you on HRT?
No. And it's funny as well, because like before the Davina McCall stuff, I would have said never to being on HRT because I do have a history of cancer in my family and myself especially. So I would always err on the side of caution personally and go, not sure if I want to go down that road. And at the time, of course, I didn't know I was having hysterectomy. So I was like, oh, it's fine. I've got years to think about those things. Now I'm obviously like, I don't know. I do try to do some herbal supplements. Yeah. And to be honest, the hot flashes are the worst. They're the worst for me. Everything else I can kind of, you know, keep in check and deal with, you know, and try extra cream and other things. But it's mainly, it's the hot flushes at nighttime because you go from the extremes. 1 minute I'm absolutely fine. Next minute, you know, I'm, oh my God, I'm on fire.
Yeah.
You know, and even if the one child tries to touch me, I'm like, oh my God, don't touch me. And then the next minute, I'm cold again. Oh my God. You know, so then of course disturbed sleep.
Yeah.
And then you're not ready for the day ahead. So I think that's the hardest battle at the moment. But I don't know. I'm not sure about HRT. But then, like I said, the Davina McCall kind of documentary was really eye-opening.
Yeah.
And it's always really interesting when these celebrities who have a bigger platform put their name to something and say, actually, I've been there and done it, and this is a genuine thing, it's not a paid, you know, then it does add some weight to it. So that was really kind of eye-opening. So it was interesting.
So then with the endometriosis, has that
completely gone?
Because they've taken it away.
So once, because, like I said, they, I think because I'm younger, and even though endometriosis happens in younger people, at the same time, when I was saying these problems to the doctors, they were like, oh, look, it's fine. They were quite dismissive for a lot of years. Obviously, when they took it, and I can't say this word, they found loads of adenoids. Is it adenoids?
Yeah, that's right.
They found it was just basically an absolute mess. And the lovely surgeon said to me, you know, she was like, it was horrific, and no wonder you're in agony. But because they took everything, I've had no other problems. It hadn't spread. There were no kind of adhesions anywhere else. It was obviously stuck to the bowel, but they've sorted that out. But yeah, so since then, touch wood, I've had no other problems from that side, which has been amazing.
Yeah.
So, and I think I'm lucky, you know, some people with that condition don't get to have children.
Yeah.
I've had mine early. It does explain why I had issues getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Because obviously the, so my first son, had him 16 years ago, no problems in pregnancy. Didn't even know I was pregnant until I was 4 months.
Wow.
Which is insane. I was like, oh, I'm pregnant. I had no idea. You know, whereas then the second one, Mason, it's our son that passed, you know, we had real issues with him and I couldn't stay pregnant. So we lost him as a late miscarriage. Then I lost twins after and I had a heterotrophic pregnancy. So I lost one of my tubes. And then the youngest, Jaden, it was just the pregnancy was awful. He was trying to come early. I had to have stitches. I had to have steroid injections. It was just...
Blimey.
So I think my body just wasn't destined to carry children. So the fact that I've got two lovely boys, I'm just, you know, more than happy. You know, it's just, so grateful for that. It's just interesting how now... Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Weird not taking stuff on holiday. Weird not having to think, oh, I can't go swimming today.
Yeah.
It's lovely, but it's taken a while to realise, you know, and to clear all my stores out.
Yeah.
Because I used to have massive stores of things because I was a really bad leader with all the issues. And now suddenly I had, oh, can donate all that stuff, don't need it. It's been quite, quite liberating.
That's amazing.
So I'm glad now. So now it's turned into the, I'm glad I had it done. I'm glad it was a good thing. And I'm, no pain anymore, which is awesome.
So you've still got your ovaries, but then it's not, I don't know what the word is, like they're they're not giving you a period every month.
No, so the egg basically, the way the surgeon explained to me, which I found bizarre, is just literally the egg just comes out and just goes plop into nothing and then it's reabsorbed because it's got nowhere to go. It's got no tubes, it's got nothing to go into. So it's just released into your body and reabsorbed because it's got no, because I thought, where's this egg going? I don't understand. Does it pop out? What happens? But no, it just gets completely reabsorbed into your body. You know, they, if it was, if I had a hysterectomy for any other reason like cancer or something else, then they would have had to take the ovaries, but because it was for endometriosis, they said, and there was no adhesions or anything on the ovaries, they were both healthy looking, it's better to keep them, they said, because then naturally your numbers will just deplete over the years. It won't be a sudden kind of shock like overnight you're in menopause. It's just a natural progression, which is fine because I think that's a, you know, osteoporosis the long one, you know, things like that, that lowers the risk of that happening.
I have
very low vitamin D, which would explain why I'm so tired. I just found out I've had a lot of testing and I'm getting some genetic testing done at the moment, and it was interesting that the vitamin D came out saying basically you've got like no vitamin D, which would explain why I'm so tired all the time and getting infections all the times and colds and so,
I think a lot of people are like that anyway, because like in England, there's no sun.
There's no sun. And even on a sunny day, I mean, then we put like so much, you know, we stay inside because we have the extremes. Like, you don't get like a nice day. It's just then so hot that we then moan, don't we? And we sit indoors. But I know, I definitely think, we don't get enough vitamin D. Yeah. So we all need supplements, I think, for that one. Definitely.
We do. So how have you kind of navigated perimenopause with work or just... like your mood swings. So every month we obviously, we were talking about this before we were recording, I think, that you kind of get a bit moody or grumpy. Like I'm due on now, actually. I'm about 4 or 5 days late.
Shall
but
I be
I'm
scared?
No.
Oh,
what's gonna happen?
Yeah, exactly.
But I know that I'm perimenopausal because my cycles are all over the place. Like last month was 25 days. The month before was 28. Now it's like I'm on 33, 34 days.
Wow.
I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Still not bleeding. So, and I know the next couple of days, I kind of get a little bit more grumpy and a bit itchy kind of thing. But as you don't have them anymore, do you still have that kind of grumpiness once a month?
Do you know what? It's weird, actually, because even though I have, I should be tracking it probably out of interest and curiosity, but I haven't been. So I don't know if it 100% is... a fake period, you know, period. But I definitely noticed that once a month I still get more spots around that time.
Okay.
Because I never was spotted as a teenager, but as an adult I really suffer with the endometriosis with spots and increase of those things. And I still once a month get more spots. definitely get more tired, more grumpy, want to eat chocolate, all the usual period symptoms, I still do get that. And I don't, I think a year on, I don't think now I could say it's, you know, you're kind of subconscious doing it. I don't think it is just, you know, me doing it. I think there is something, and it would make sense because I've still got the hormones.
Yeah.
I've still got my body producing the hormones.
Yeah.
Yes, they're getting reabsorbed, but clearly that's having an impact in my blood.
Yeah.
You know, so it's elevating things. So I do think, I think it's interesting that I'm definitely still having some kind of period symptoms, but then also mixed in with them being perimenopausal, which is really strange.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I think it's difficult from that side. I think work is, I just think we slog on, honestly.
Yeah, we do.
I think we slog sometimes. Women. Yeah, sometimes not in a good way.
Yeah.
And I'm trying so hard to be more mindful of that now.
Yeah.
It's hard and I'm not the best at it. I really am so used to putting everyone else first, do the kids, the husband, work, you know, businesses that need help. Well, I'll do all that first and me last. I'm trying to say no more to things, which feels really against who I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was meant to go to this big networking thing last night and I would have loved to have gone, you know, really looking forward to it. But actually, I've just got over having this nasty cold, kind of bronchitis. I'm feeling better, but I'm still getting really tired in the evenings.
Yeah.
Do I want to go out and spend 3 hours out driving, like, you know, for an hour? Not massively when I'm feeling like this. So I said no, you know, and it's, I wouldn't have done that before. I would have pushed myself.
Yeah.
And then the next day suffered.
Yeah.
But it's definitely leading to kind of, trying to take more time and saying no to things. And then, and even with work, you know, normally I would have always been rushing into the office, even with a cold, like, I can do this, I can work through it, you know. I mean, they always laugh. I've been in my chair working and then been taken to the hospital 2 hours later because I had to have my appendix out. You know, I literally work because I'm, it's just been trained into me to be a worker, you know, drilled in. Whereas now I'm like, no, I called in sick.
Yeah.
And I don't ever call in sick. It's really unusual for me to call in sick. I have to be death's door to call in sick. But I was like, no, do you know what? I don't feel well. Any other person would call in sick with this.
Yeah.
I need a day of rest to be in bed with some Lemsip or something nice.
Yeah.
Not Lemsip, actually. I did a whole social media post and that's the worst thing known to man. Dreadful. I couldn't even stop. My husband made me have to pinch my nose. Oh, God. Never again. But, you know, it's a nice hot honey and lemon and, you know, and just take some time for me as opposed to constantly thinking rush, rush, rush.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's the problem, like, work, but also life.
Yeah.
And this day and age, and trying to be a mum who's working, we just rush.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, we rush non-stop. When I look at, you know, my husband, love him dearly, because he'll be listening to this, love him dearly. But, you know, he gets to go to a job, and he doesn't have to think about dressing someone else in the morning. He gets himself dressed, and he goes. And then he comes home, and he has his bath, and he has his dinner, and that's him done.
Yeah.
I have to get up and then I have to get children ready, make their lunches, then think about the washing, then put all the animals out. Yes, caveat again, husband. I know they're my animals, but still. You know. And then come home and then do the dinners and then the homework and then try to do more work because I work part from home, part from the office. So then I have to start my work again and then straight into everything else. And then I sit down for half an hour and everyone's still talking to me, you know, and then my shower. That's my one sanctuary. But it's just, it's not comparable. And again, I know there's some men who are single dads and things out there, but I just personally don't think it's comparable with what we're trying to achieve. And maybe we put that on ourselves because we want to have careers and things. But then I also think, well, why shouldn't we? I'm so done with that whole kind of old, you must stay at home and never have a career until the children leave home. And well, why? Who says so?
Yeah.
I don't have to have a pristine house, as we're aware. And, you know, I'm not worried about that stuff.
Yeah.
But my children will always come first.
Yeah.
Always before any kind of business or myself or anything else, but I do think we should still be allowed to explore creativity and have, you know, a passion and explore that and work and have our own money and do our own things and be independent. And it's just interesting how though we still have to then be performing in that our A game
because society says that we should be doing all this stuff like 9 to 5 as well as work, as well as like home stuff with the kids. But also, I learned, actually, last year, I think it was, that our cycle, obviously, is 28, roughly, days. A man's cycle was 24 hours. So all the 9 to 5 stuff is built for a man.
That's so really fascinating.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I was like, wow. Because they still have 4 stages in their cycle, and we have 4 stages in our cycle. And it is, it's like Darren, my husband, gets grumpy at sort of around 3 o'clock. And there's always that called that 3 p.m. slump, which we would put into our cycle as like our time that we are going to bleed.
Yes.
So
okay,
it's really interesting. That is interesting. And whenever like the 9 to 5 came out, I think it was like in the
60s. Yeah.
It was men who were going to work and we were staying at home with the kids.
Yeah.
But now it's like you have to do all this stuff and
Yes.
do whatever.
Yeah, and still meet your quota, still do it, you know, and still remember the school stuff. And if you don't, the teacher will frown at you for forgetting, you know, the pocket money or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I know. I think that's why I'm so rebellious with it, though, because it frustrates me and I'm not very good. I've been, you know, I mean, I was brought up by a very, I'd say, strict kind of RAF dad, you know, strict in the sense that he wanted the best for us, but it was very much keep a clean house, do this, do that, you know, and then a mum who, yes, again, did stay at home to start with, but then in secondary years went back to work, and good on her, you know, and both of them had their roles, I call it. But actually now it's funny because I think they're really behind me being completely different, and actually they've raised someone that's really headstrong and that I don't take a lot of rubbish. Yeah. And if I want to buy a goat husband, I'm afraid I'd buy a goat. I don't ask his permission, you know, because it's my money, you know, and I just think it's very much, it just rewriting those rules and teaching people. But it is, you do then come up against battles. You know, the amount of times I get frowned out, like I said, by some of the teachers at the school because I can't come to every, you know, I don't know, show and share thing. Wish I could, but I can't, and my son's aware of that. And then, like I say to my son, but do you want that Nintendo Switch, or do you want this, do you want that holiday? Well, who's paying for it? Me. So I have to work, so it's that balance, you know, and just trying to strive towards stuff, but also not being conformist. I'm so you know, even like with us moving, you know, I want to obviously not have that kind of picket house, you know. But I don't mind if it's a cabin in the woods, which is, you know, someone else would think is bizarre, you know. I don't, it doesn't have to be the conventional dream that everyone has.
Yeah.
Because I think people very easily fall into that 9 to 5. The man works, the wife stays at home, or has a part-time job, but it must fit around the husband and that you know, stuff. That's and the one. Children, you know, and then we must have one holiday per year, and we must do this. You know, it's just too, some people that's lovely, and some people love that, you know, kind of, routine. I am not one of those people. It does my head in. I can't do it, and I'm definitely raising two boys who are not gonna be like that at all, you know. It's just not in me.
No,
but it is society. It's a weird thing.
It is. And then with the back to perimenopause, how are you, like, with your well-being? Are you making sure that you're doing things for yourself that
I'm trying to.
That's hard.
I'm trying to. Again, this is, I would even say it's only really more mindfully happening in the last couple of months, you know, even though it's, I'm a year in. I just, it's finding the right things, because I am a bit of a, I'm not into kind of wishy, you know, I'm very direct, I'm not into wishy-washy things, you know. Someone said, oh, you got time to talk, no thank you, you know. Someone else, great, not for me. But then also, I was about to join a women's circle, and I think there's one coming up that a friend's going, I'm going with a friend to a women's circle, and that's completely out of my comfort zone. Like, that's just, you know, is it going to be wishy-washy? I don't know. I'm also very excited, you know, but I'm trying to do, more things that are out of my comfort zone, that are really not necessarily kind of your physical, you know, like dry skin, I can put a cream on. I can fix those things. Dry hair, lovely, get it cut. But, you know, I can do those things. It's more about trying to heal kind of the inner self and take more time for my well-being as a person and as a woman. And I'm trying to do more of that. And that's a bit likewise trying to fit it in. And that's why I'm honest. Like, am I going to go to an evening class somewhere? No, let's be honest. I'll be falling asleep. No. So I'm then trying to think, okay, but what will you do? And, you know, try different things. Try things out of my comfort zone. So, no, I am, I'm definitely trying to take more time. And just be mindful. Even the small things, you know, like I said, a shower is massively my thing. Like, I love to have a shower in the evening and just literally shut the door, lock it so they can't come in. And, you know, and just switch off a few minutes, because I love water. Aquarius, just absolutely love water. So that's my thing. Or reading a book in the evening. Or, I don't know, even having lunch. Sounds stupid, but I don't, because I'm a bit of, I'm a faster, and I don't normally eat until 11 or 12. I have my breakfast, so they always laugh at me eating my lunch at my desk or after the school run. But actually trying to remember, you know, to have that allotted, so eat, because I forget sometimes lunch and I go straight to dinner. No, have lunch, make it now, you know, drink my water. I'm trying to do those practical steps, because I do think they make a massive difference, and just keeping you healthy. You know, because I get run down very easily. So if I don't do those things, I am going to notice it. So, but it's just, it is a juggle, and it's not easy. But I'm always then interested in listening to podcasts like Emma's, or trying to find, you know, other like-minded people. Which is also the thing that I'm definitely big into the moment. It's trying to find my new kind of new crowd, new, you know, because you do go through cycles, don't you, of not necessarily friendships, you do, but it's also just the people that you want to surround yourself with. And I'm definitely onto this kind of well-being and trying something different. So I want to surround myself with people who are like-minded, who can lift you up, or expose you to something different, and you think, oh, I haven't thought of that before, I haven't really, you know, experienced that. So no, I definitely am.
And then with the fibromyalgia as well, is the perimenopause affected that more? Like, do you feel more pain? No, in a way, because you've had the hysterectomy, but has it changed because you've had that for years? So
I don't think so. I think it's hard to say if it's that. I definitely find my fibromyalgia has become worse, but I don't know if that's because things have all happened at the same time. I can't tell whether it's the hysterectomy or straight after going back to work on my hysterectomy. I was under a lot of stress for the last year. My main day job, I was given another department that I didn't want and had to do two basic people's jobs under one. So that put me under a lot of stress. So the last year has actually been extremely stressful, which I think has not helped then health problems and fibromyalgia, you know, not great if you're stressed. It's really not. You're more tired. The pain goes up. So, you know, in the last few weeks, I finally have now ditched one of those things and have cut back. So now my stress can start to come down. So I think it'll be interesting to see now moving forward. I think it's hard to know whether it has recently. I think a lot more of it was based on the stress side rather. But we'll be interesting to see, especially, you know, eventually menopause and fibromyalgia. I mean, you could Google that and not much comes up. Because I will say now, still, even though fibromyalgia is really getting recognised, not much comes up. There's not much information. You know, I don't have any medication, which the hospital always frown upon, say I should be on medication. Well, I was on 18 tablets back in the day. That's why we lost our son. I didn't realise I couldn't be on them. The hospital didn't tell me to come off. They didn't realise either. Ridiculous. Came off too late. He passed away from all the medication mixes that I was on. So now I just don't take anything. And actually I'm managing it through diet and through being healthy. And I won't go back. So even though I've been suffering, I'd rather suffer and find a way through that than go back on to having loads of tablets because they don't understand it properly.
No.
My brother sends me a lot of data and kind of information and stuff. That was very Canadian. Sorry, data. Thinking of my brother talking. My brother is English, but he's become very Canadianized after living over there for so long. You know, and he sends me a lot of information or has done, you know, there's been studies from Canada over the years or even America. They seem a lot more progressive. I know we have a lot of stringent rules in England for drug testing and even just understanding things. But a lot of the information I've got has come from abroad rather than England and from my doctors, which has been interesting. You know, don't have aspartame. I mean, you shouldn't have artificial sweeteners anyway, but like aspartame really is bad. When I looked at it before and researched, my sister-in-law sent it to me. Literally, a fibromyalgia person, their body, if they have aspartame or something like that that's man-made, their body puts it into crystals in your blood. It like turns it into your joints. It was, I can't remember, I may get that factually wrong, but there was something which then increases your pain. And it was really, you know, fascinating. But I cut a lot of things out, gluten, dairy, refined sugar, I try to keep reduced. And that really keeps my pain in check. You know, yes, the winter coming. I get worse in the winter. I get worse if it's raining and cold.
Damp.
Not great.
Yeah.
But I know what to do. Just a nice hot shower or wrap up. 2 hours on the next day, much better, you know. And it's usually massively linked to stress for me.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm dreaming towards that job in the future where I can leave and I can just raise my animals and my little farm and keep doing my Sussex mom and writing my books and doing nice things. You know, making money that we all need, but not having that at the centre. You know, I must earn this money. You know, that pressure. Because I just think, again, money, hate it. Unhealthy, it's such a negative word. I hate it. I wish we didn't need it. We need it, but
and
I
I'm doing like an EFT tapping thing at the moment, and it's all to do with money and having like the label. So not labelling money. Money is just a thing to get stuff. It's
That's
true. An exchange, that's the word. So you exchange your money for something in return that you feel is gonna benefit you.
I'm
rewiring my brain for that, because like you sometimes you think, oh my god, that's really expensive, and actually it's not, it's just what it is, and that's how you perceive
it. Because I definitely that's true actually, because even yes, I earn more now than I did in my younger years, but at the same time, I put more value on what I buy. I won't buy things just because they're cheap, because I know they're going to break or they're not going to be with me for a long time. I value buying something that's better quality.
Yeah.
Even though it costs me more, I'll just buy less of that. A bit like with the food shop. I'd rather buy something at the butcher's occasionally as a treat, but then, you know, rather than buying loads of meat elsewhere, I'll just have less meat. You know, it's that whole balancing act and what you value things on.
Yeah,
that is a good way to look at it, actually. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Thank you.
I thought it was quite different.
Yeah, no, it is. I like that.
But then, I don't know if you ever found as well with the kids that when we used Calpol, when they were really young, they always liked the sugar-free one. they always had diarrhea. And it wasn't until nursery had said, oh, it might be the Calpol.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh my God, yeah, I can't remember what's in it. Yeah. But even now, they're 9 and 6 and they still have issues with it.
Yeah.
And it's hardly, you can hardly buy proper one, not sugar free.
I know.
And you're like, oh my God, so why is it out there?
I know.
And we're diverting here. But
it's so frustrating. It really is. That's the thing. It really is frustrating because I'd rather my children have the real, you know, real cane sugar.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
Than, or fruit, you know, agave or maple syrup. I use those rather than having artificial sweeteners. Yeah. I can't abide it because really any artificial sweetener or anything artificial is all made from the same mammoth chemicals that make our cleaning products. I mean, it's insane when you think of it like that. So that was one of the early studies I looked at and it's like, it's awful. I just put in chemicals in my child's body or even my body.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me at all. No. You know, I think it was sucralose because I think
it's what,
yeah, I'm sure because my son, so he was allergic, Jaden, the youngest, allergic to everything when he was born. No. God, it was like dairy. Then it was gluten, tomatoes, pineapples, sorbitol.
Oh, okay.
That was in it because he couldn't have, he had to have the sugar version of Calpol. And I know what you're saying, you'd go to the shop and they'd have like barely any of those and then loads of sugar free. And you're like, I don't want the sugar free ones. But it is, it's just, it's mind boggling. But that does come back to that old statement, you are what you eat, aren't you? And it's, you know, don't get me wrong. I love a good little bit of a treat now and again. And, you know, sometimes I haven't made cakes. I haven't made, you know, the healthy ones and everything else. But majority of time, I'm a real avid, like, I'd rather make something with dates as my caramel and do things because I know what's going in it.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot more conscious now of my health than I would have been. Which I suppose then, that's a blessing. You know, I look at all the health things I've had and you then think, well, actually, I'm more aware of things now. I wouldn't have been aware.
Yeah.
I'm doing the best I can to keep myself healthy and around for as long as possible.
Yes,
obviously, my husband counteracts everything I do. Problem is, it's really hard to be a good role model and say, look, it's so healthy for you. Look at my green sludge I drink when I'm always sick. But I think mine's a genetic problem. Here's why they're doing that. So, it's, yeah, it's like, oh, God, a walking advert. But it is, you know, and just trying to raise children that are mindful. What they're putting in their body and understanding, you know, because if anything's colourful, they love it. Yes. I mean, got this new Prime thing has just
Hugo's obsessed with it. They haven't had it yet, and I'm not gonna.
Jaden has, and Jaden is obsessed, but I feel so strict now because it just it infuriates me because it's two blokes in America now, absolutely, you know, millionaires thanks to children, which just I'm sorry, but disgusts me. That's it's not horrible. A good message at all. Obviously, the ingredients are absolutely atrocious as well. Mm. So I predominantly only let them drink water. I'm really quite strict. And sometimes I might buy like a little, you know, squash or something. Yeah. But I'm very strict normally.
Yeah.
I just think the whole thing's wrong. And then the new line they bought it as actually an energy drink that children are buying by accident.
Yes.
I mean, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
It's crazy to say that they didn't. They knew what they were doing. The packaging is so similar.
Yeah.
The colours are the same. A child sees bright coloured things like, you know, bright eye slowly. They gravitate towards it, don't they?
And they're always at that height as well, children's height. And that drives me insane.
Exactly. Oh, no, it's, you know, you have to have ID to buy it, whatever. Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Like, it just...
Yeah.
No. I just, so I don't agree with things like that at all. It really frustrates me. But but that's what we're battling against, isn't it? Constantly.
Yeah.
You know, the school when their parents giving out things after school, which is, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm fine if they get a packet of sweets occasionally, all these things.
Yeah.
But I'm just so, you know, I don't want them to have bad teeth. No. I don't want them to have addictions to sugar when they're older.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to understand actually, you know, you can have treats, but it is a treat.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I had maybe like a McDonald's, God, once a month as a child, you know, we would have one takeaway per month and it was a real treat. It was, you know, KFC bucket and there's one piece of chicken and, you know, it wasn't this like disposable, like, let's have it every day, every week. It just wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Which I'm battling against because my youngest wants a McDonald's every week and I'm the mean one that goes, no. As his friends all going off to McDonald's, I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Not under my house.
No.
Because I know what goes into it. It's not chicken.
Yeah.
Or if it is, I don't know what part of a chicken it is. It's quite worrying actually.
No, I always say that. Now we are going to go to a short break. See you the other side. Hey, I just wanted to share with you that I am now an ambassador for Toby Gifts and they are an incredible company who do coconut bowls, upcycled rice bags, recycled plastic notebooks in the form of elephant dung paper, yes, you heard that right, coconut spoons and bamboo straws. And Tovey Gifts is an incredible company owned by English entrepreneur Hannah Hodson, and she wanted to build an ethical, fair trade and socially responsible business selling coconut and smoothie bowls to the UK. And it was founded with a triple bottom line philosophy where people and planet are just as important as profit. The team established partnerships with many different groups in Sri Lanka to build a brighter future for their local communities. And it is such a lovely company to work for. They're fair trade, they have the ability to directly change lives, as well as our ever-present sense of evolving environmental changes help us to keep focus on making a world a better place. So you can get a discount with toveygifts.com. Go to toveygifts.com and in the checkout put YogiGemma10 for a 10% discount, and go ahead and find out more about them because they are an incredible company and I absolutely love them. The coconut bowls are so beautiful. The children really love them. They also love the straws as well. It's just, oh, I just love it so, so much. And actually, I'm using the notebooks for all of my clients as well. So yes, go and have a look. It's toveygifts.com and use YogiGemma10 at the checkout for your wonderful discount. But then as children, then they grow up and then it's like going to work as well. And what are they eating at work? Are they not having lunch breaks? And now, like usual, like we do as well, don't, or the corporate world, do not have lunch breaks, or they're eating at their desk all the time. And that's really wrong.
Yeah,
or you quickly go out and get a meal deal and then come back in. And
100%. You see them just flow constantly out, don't you? If you're in my office, I can kind of see them flowing out to go, you'll get their food at lunch, go back to the office.
Yeah.
Most of my building eats at the desk. A couple might go out for a walk to get something, a coffee or something. And again, then you're thinking money every day and coffee. You know, I'm very trained now. I'm actually worse if I'm working from home. This week I've worked from home and because the kitchen's there. It's called me so much. But normally at work I'm very good because if I don't take it, you know, if I take it with me, that's all I can have.
Yeah.
So I literally take what I'm going to eat, and then I have a food drawer at work, but it's only got healthy cereal bars in and nuts, and I've done it on purpose so that if I'm desperate, that's my choice, Gemma. You have no other option. But my lunch break is non-existent because for me to be able to pick my children up, I have to use my lunch break.
And that's really bad.
So I use my lunch break to pick my children up, hence why I don't have a lunch. Mm-hmm. And I either have to eat at my desk before the school drive, or I come home and then I sit down and then work again from my desk at home whilst eating lunch. So, and again, that's the only way I could juggle getting it in. Otherwise, I have to work later in the evening.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, what do you give up, finishing earlier or losing your lunch break? And that, again, comes back to that 9-to-5, and I absolutely hate 9-to-5. And I'm doing it now, but I'm doing it for the kind of greater good of the family to get that mortgage and, you know, for the finances. But as soon as I can, it'll be gone because I love being self-employed.
Yeah.
I love, you know,
I love it.
Even working part-time for somebody and then doing the rest of the time. So I just love flexibility. I'm not good with doing, you know, going when it's dark, coming home when it's dark in the winter. I can't abide it. I just, you know, if I want to go, I don't know, to an event or to a farm shop, I want to be able to do it. I can't do it otherwise. It's always, oh, it has to be a weekend.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that time. I don't like it. Yeah. I miss being self-employed and having a flexible life, you know. So
I think that's why a lot of women are doing it now, especially women that have children, and we can just work around what we want rather than being in a 9-to-5, which wasn't set up for us in the first place.
No, absolutely. So, I'm so fascinated. I'm going to have to look into that. You really opened my eyes with that one, which also comes back to your Dolly Parton, because she wrote that about the whole kind of husband and, you know, fascinating.
Yeah.
But it really is actually, when you think about that stereotypical image in my head now of, you know, the man going to work, leaving with the car, the wife at home in her pretty little dress, cooking dinner, you know, it totally is that. And it's not where we are anymore.
No.
It really
isn't. And you might be the same as well. I work with high achieving women, like we are high achievers.
Yeah.
But if you are like in a, I don't know, work from London or something like that, and you live here, it's like an hour commute.
Yeah.
So you've got to get up really early. You're then 9-to-5. You don't get a lunch break. You're then coming back home. Yeah. But then you've then just got to cook dinner. You sit on the sofa and then you're emailing at like 10 o'clock at night. You never switch off.
No.
And you've got the whole cycle again the next day. Yeah, so exactly. It's just so not.
No.
How we should be.
No, it's not. And it's actually really disappointing because you look at other countries and they're so much more forward thinking than we are.
Yeah.
And I look at that, you know, yes, COVID has probably helped a lot of businesses in England, you know, not at the time. now, I would say some of the corporate ones, you know, like we're allowed to work for some of our time from home if we're able to. If we're able to do the job at home, we can. I'm able to, so I can. So that is more flexible. So that does help me if a child is sick or the weather turns or something happens. So that's great. But at the same time, that also has a negative because it means I never escape work. My work phone is upstairs, my office phone, so if it rings, I pick it up, you know.
Yeah.
I'm always kind of able to look at my emails from my phone, which is dangerous because then I always look at work. Yes. So I've had to say to myself, do not look. If you're not on shift, you do not look.
Yeah.
But it is, it's just, you look at other places and you just think, oh, they've got a better style.
Yeah.
You know, some of them do the old siesta, don't they? So they have that kind of morning when you're really awake and present, and then they have the time off during the day and then they work later. Yeah. Or, you know, there's just different options. But I think we're very regimented.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
We like our rules and our times and our cues and we mustn't, you know, not conform.
Yeah, yeah.
Which actually, the other day, I said this to someone and it cracked me up. We were laughing about queuing because British people, we know how to queue very well. We know how to queue. It's like this inbuilt thing. And when I thought about that, I thought, I know why. Because at reception, you know, at preschool and at reception year, even from then at the primary school, you were taught how to queue. You were taught how to queue going into school. You were taught to queue to go for lunch. You were taught to queue if there is a fire drill. You know, it's literally ingrained in us from that. Is that military? Because we are so military in England.
Yeah.
You know, and then to then transition through all your life, it stays with you.
Yes.
And it is, it's just, and then, you know, if someone queue jumps, we get so irate because it is against what you should be doing. We've been taught how to queue. How dare you? I will wait here for 4 hours because I have to, even if there's a better option out there. It's just that
funny. That's really funny.
Which comes back to that childhood, and it's so regimented in England.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I am really lucky because we go to a village school. It's, you know, under 100 children. It's very small.
Nice.
I put him there for a reason, and you know, it's just, yeah, it is nice. And they can wear, they're a little bit more lax with school uniform. Yeah. And, you know, if they wear trainers, it's a little bit more kind of, you know, relaxed than some of the kind of other primary schools.
Yeah.
But I look at, you know, my nieces and nephews in Canada, I think, God, they can have coloured hair going to school. Yeah, they can wear their own clothes. The freedom they have, you know, the summer camps they do.
Yeah.
There's nothing over here for like that.
Yeah.
We have maybe like, yes, you can turn them in and pay 50 quid a day to send them. It's nothing like they have over in Canada, where they actually go off and have real life experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, out in the country, out in the countryside, you know, nature. Yeah. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I know someone over here, a lot of people will say, oh, they send them in uniform so it's always standardised so that no child gets bullied. That's a lie because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Because actually some child in uniform will have a hand-me-down uniform or the shoes won't match or the bag still won't match and it's not a cool brand.
Yeah.
So you'll still get bullied. So actually it makes no difference.
Yeah.
And I would say this generation that I'm seeing are a lot kinder.
Yeah.
A lot kinder. And I have a 16-year-old who's never had an issue with being bullied about he doesn't always wear Nike. Some of it was Reebok. Wouldn't have happened back in my day.
Yeah.
A Reebok would have got you back bullied, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Even an Adidas was the cheaper version of Nike. I mean, it was real, you know, now they don't care.
No.
And I think that's, you know, so I do think we're coming out of that.
Yeah.
You know, even at my son's secondary school before he left, there was some of his peers who were transgender. There was a girl who was transitioning.
Wow.
You know, didn't get bullied once.
Yeah.
Because I was concerned because my eldest is gay and I, you know, spoke to the pastoral team and was like, well, can we look after his welfare? Because he didn't want to tell anyone at that time and he's only now becoming more himself at college.
Yeah, that's good.
But it was interesting. They said, honestly, none of these children in this kind of, you know, and I would say this one, LGBTQ. Is that it?
Yeah. And then there's another.
There's longer.
Glass. Yeah,
there is something. I was like, it's so confused, it's so long. But none of them have been bullied.
That's now, really
back when
nice.
I went to school, I mean, I got bullied for having the wrong skirt or for not having my hair done the right way or not wearing makeup, not being a cool kid, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, yes, you've still got some of the silly people there, but it's not what it was.
Yeah.
And I really think we need to take a leap out of the book of some of these other countries and understand that it doesn't need to be militant to be good.
Yeah.
You don't have to conform to be good or to, you know, be a good citizen, a good adult, you know.
Yeah.
It just, it's interesting to me, but I do think it's small waves.
Yeah,
Because I just think we've got a real, quite a backbone in England.
Yeah,
it's hard to break.
Yeah.
It's hard to break.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're doing, you and I are doing, and a lot of other women are trying to.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
do make our voices be heard.
Yeah,
And they're equal to the man you know, the male counterpart. We are the same at the end of the day. No one's better than each other.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
Oh, I could talk for years on these things. Honestly, it gets me going. Honestly, this is why don't invite Gemma to podcast. Talks too much.
No. So then, to wrap up today's conversation, what are two takeaway points? Now I'm putting you on the spot.
You are.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. So I definitely am going to go research the 9-to-5 thing because that's just blown my mind. I love that. That has absolutely blown my mind. And I think, can I give a takeaway point?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, go on then. I think personally is, to anybody listening, it's very much just believe in yourself. Even when people say your idea is crazy, because I can tell you now, even my close family members, when I started Sussex Mum, very much said, oh, let's see how it goes. Oh, there's be careful. You know, and it naturally is the people closest to you because, yes, they are concerned, but maybe they don't understand your vision. I would just say, don't give up on that. Don't let people sway you from your vision. Stay true to what you want to do and just go for it. And if you fail, you fail. You start another thing. Don't ever stop. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, and if you have no money to start a business, you don't need money to start a business.
Yeah.
You can have an idea and you can put that onto social media, which is free to use. Go onto LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. You know, it's all free. You know, you just don't need money this day and age. That's why I'm teaching, you know, even young entrepreneurs. My sons have both got businesses because you don't need a lot of money or upkeep. You just need a good idea and some strength and willpower. So just don't give up. Keep going.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. It's been really good
Thank you for having me. It has been fun. We finally did it. It's taken ages, but we're here.
We did.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so, so much for being here with me today. It means the world to me and my heart is so full of gratitude right now. If you are feeling pulled to, I would love you to leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever they're called, or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from, whichever platform you are on. Leave a review, even do a 5-star rating if you fancy it. And yes, go and follow me over on Instagram at gemma.haley.niece, or I'm on LinkedIn as Gemma Niece. So thank you so, so much for being here, and always reach out to me. I'm always have my DMs open, as again, Instagram at gemma.haley.niece or LinkedIn, or go on my website, which is www.gemmaniece.com. So thank you so much, and I will see you again next week.